We're in the book of Exodus, of course, chapter 32 and 33.
Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods, that we shall go before us. For this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. And they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings, and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go, get down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf, and worshipped it, and sacrificed to it, and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" And the Lord said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation." Then Moses pleaded with the Lord his God and said, "Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians speak and say, 'He brought them out to harm them, to kill them in the mountains, and to consume them from the face of the earth'? Turn from your fierce wrath and relent from this harm to your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, 'I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have spoken of I give to your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever.'" So the Lord relented from the harm which he said he would do to his people. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tablets of the testimony were in his hand. The tablets were written on both sides, and on the one side and on the other side they were written. Now the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "There is a noise of war in the camp." But he said, "It is not the noise of the shout of victory, nor the noise of the cry of defeat, but the sound of singing I hear." So it was, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. Then he took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire, and ground it to powder. And he scattered it on the water and made the children of Israel drink it. And Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them?" So Aaron said, "Do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, 'Make us gods that shall go before us.' As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And I said to them, "Whoever has any gold, let them break it off." So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. Now, when Moses saw that the people were unrestrained, for Aaron had not restrained them, to their shame among their enemies, then Moses stood in the entrance of the camp and said, "Whoever is on the Lord's side, come to me." And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. And he said to them, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let every man put his sword on his side and go in and out from entrance to entrance throughout the camp, And let every man kill his brother, every man his companion, and every man his neighbor. So the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. Then Moses said, consecrate yourselves today to the Lord, that he may bestow on you a blessing this day, for every man has opposed his son and his brother. Now it came to pass on the next day that Moses said to the people, you have committed a great sin. So now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. And Moses returned to the Lord and said, oh, these people have committed a great sin and have made for themselves a god of gold. Yet now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, I pray, blot me out of your book, which you have written. And the Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of my book. Now, therefore, go lead the people to the place of which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit for punishment, I will visit punishment upon them for their sin. So the Lord plagued the people because of what they did with the calf which Aaron made. Then the Lord said to Moses, depart and go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, to your descendants I will give it, and I will send my angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite, and the Amorite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people. And when the people heard this bad news, they mourned, and no one put on his ornaments. For the Lord had said to Moses, say to the children of Israel, you are a stiff-necked people. I could come up into your midst in one moment and consume you. Now, therefore, take off your ornaments, that I may know what to do to you. So the children of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments by Mount Horeb. Moses took his tent and pitched it outside the camp, far from the camp, and called it the Tabernacle of Meeting. And it came to pass that everyone who sought the Lord went out to the Tabernacle of Meeting, which was outside the camp. So it was, whenever Moses went out to the tabernacle, that all the people rose, and each man stood at his tent door and watched Moses until he had gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass, when Moses entered the tabernacle, that the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. All the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose and worshipped each man in his tent door. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend, and he would return to the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. Then Moses said to the Lord, see, you say to me, bring up this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name, and you have also found grace in my sight. Now therefore I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way, that I may know you, and that I may find grace in your sight, and consider that this nation is your people. And he said, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. Then he said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here. For now then will it be known that your people and I have found grace in your sight, except you go with us. So we shall be separate, your people and I, from all the people who are upon the face of the earth. So the Lord said to Moses, I will also do this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. And he said, please show me your glory. Then he said, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But he said, You cannot see my face, for no man shall see me and live. And the Lord said, Here is a place by me, and you shall stand on the rock. So it shall be, while my glory passes by, that I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and will cover you with my hand while I pass by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen.
Kind of one way, it's a pretty heavy section, isn't it? There's a lot to go through here. I'm going to try my very best to do it in half an hour. Any comments? Any thoughts?
Well, I've always kind of wondered about Aaron, and because he so quickly did what the people asked, and it was like, was he fearing for his life that he gave in so quickly?
No, I mean, we will go through that. It's very interesting to know a little bit about Aaron, what he stated.
Okay.
Very important to know what he stated and what took place.
My question has to do with verse 10 of chapter 32. Was it 32? It seemed like the Lord was ready to make Moses the great nation instead of Abraham. And I wondered, did the Lord just say that so that Abraham could be an intercessor?
We will cover that.
Okay.
Very important statement.
I've always been amazed by this passage and how many weeks were they from the spreading of the Red Sea? And here already
we know that
Moses disappears
days
for a week.
Plus another 40 days,
yeah.
Okay? So we got 90 days. Divide that by 7, what do you get?
Yeah. I don't have my calculator, but it's something 8 or so, 9.
It's relatively short. It's in the fourth month. This is taking place in the fourth month. We'll talk about what's going on here, because there's a very important picture that we must see to understand why it's happened this way.
I didn't have a question. I just was agreeing with you. It's always been something that bothered me, too, in looking at, you know, how quickly, right, after just crossing the Red Sea, seeing this incredible miracle. But then I've listened to a lot of teachings on this in different directions that they were worshiping God. They were just doing it in a way they had learned in Egypt and didn't, I am more comfortable with the idea that they didn't realize what they were doing. They hadn't received the Ten Commandments yet.
They had heard the Ten Commandments.
Oh, yes. They had received them. Oh, okay.
Yes.
So, but I don't think that they really recognized. They thought they were worshiping the God that brought them out of Egypt. They were just doing it in a way they had learned in the land of Egypt and didn't really understand completely.
Yes. A good statement. We'll get there. Okay, God willing, if I could do it in half an hour.
I just find it fascinating that it's earrings. It's the ear.
We'll talk about the earrings as well.
Yeah.
Okay. This is not something we think that we go to the jewelry store and say, bam, put an earring in your ear, and that's it. No. These earrings said something. We'll get to there in a minute. All right? This is the reason why in the previous chapter, talking about the person who wants an all into his masters, there's a certain insignia about that ring that identifies the owner thereof or the one who's responsible for it. Okay? We'll talk about that in detail. Any more questions? Whenever you think of earrings, don't think of modern American women with earrings in their head. This is entirely different. Because it was not, we'll get there. Remember, it was the wives, the sons, and the daughters. Okay? I don't think I'm going to be able to do this.
I'll start with
And what I'm trying to do, I want to reach a certain point, and God won't let me do this, apparently, because it's just too... I thought this chapter was going to go a little bit faster, but it's not going to go that fast. I hope that what I say to you and what I try to explain to you has some value to you. Because to understand what's going on in the 20th and the 32nd and the 30th chapter, don't ever forget what the Apostle Paul said. It is there for our admonition and for our correction, for our understanding. And so we look back on those, we don't ever call them stupid idiots, because if we don't learn from that, we become the stupid idiots. All right? Now, the very first sentence is very interesting terminology here in chapter 32, verse 1. And now when the people saw, what did they see? Well, we're not talking about vision seeing. That Moses, and the translation uses the word delayed. It's not really a good translation, all right? This particular Hebrew word has two basic meanings, or three basic meanings. Most of the time when they use to translate it into the word being ashamed or shamed, it's not a very good translation in your English. It really does not mean shame. There's another word for being ashamed, embarrassed, and humiliated because of your actions. This, and your translations here, it has to more being one who is disconnected. In other words, Moses is disconnected from his people. That's how they viewed it. Because where he's at, they don't know. Why hasn't he come down? They don't know. So he's disconnected from us. Where he's gone, we don't know where he is. He is disconnected. He has kind of like disappeared. He's disappointed us because he's left. You understand what I'm saying? This is much closer to that Hebrew word when it says delayed. Now, on the other hand, it's an okay word to consider delayed. Because that's an after the fact. We found out he didn't really delay. He was right on time, wasn't he? How long was he on the mountain? Why was he up there for 40 days? Because he had learned an awful lot? Wait a minute. What was the problem? Moses not learning? Or the people not waiting? It's the endurance. Always 40 days is the picture of seeing you're either going to pass the test or you're going to fail the test. And we'll hopefully, I hope that, well, at the end of the other chapter, you'll see the people had a, quote, second chance. And they waited 40 days. They didn't do what they did before. So they passed the test the second time. We won't talk about flying colors. We'll just say they passed the test the second time. Is that kind of picture what's going on? Now, as you and I walk this world, you and I walk and live in this world, each one of us are going to go through a trial, a test, a burdensome thing. Now, God took away Moses, the man. By the way, he's the first one in the Bible ever called the man. The man, Moses. Egypt called him the man, Moses. Now, that's not a slang expression. But in our modern American terminology, we walk up and say, oh, you're the man. Well, no, he's not the man. He's just a human being. Moses stood up as a man against incredible odds. How much of you in your world, just stop and think for a minute, how much of you, if there was a deadly snake, would pick it up by its tail? You'd say, I'll grab its head first. Pop its head, do something, kill that head first, then I'll pick it up by its tail. Now, I'll tell you, it said Moses was afraid, right? This snake was deadly. Oh, what did God tell him to do? Take it by the tail. Wow. Would you believe God? If he said, take it by the tail? We said, wait a minute, let me get a stick, let me get a rock, let me get a stone and crush his head first. No, pick it up by his tail. Because you're going to use that snake. You're going to use that deadly snake. It's going to be a weapon for you. Against, of course, the house of Egypt. Anyway, we go down here. In verse 2, and Aaron said to them, break off or cut off, tear apart, rip to pieces the golden earrings which you have in your ears, your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. What were the earrings used for? Slavery? No.
Wealth.
They weren't slaves, they were free.
Wealth?
The earring tells them what clan or tribe they were from. That's how they identify themselves. Do you have, quote, in ancient Egypt, England and Scotland and Ireland and other countries, they have what's called a crest, right? So it's a symbol of the family or symbol of the tribe. Now, we read earlier about the seals, right? Told you about the signet ring, that on that little 8x9x9 was not the names, but the signet of, or the symbol of, the tribes. So that's what we're looking at. So that earring, or what's left, right side, I don't know what side, I wasn't there, I can't tell you if it's left or right. I don't know if it's on the top or on it, I don't know. I don't know if it's pierced, I don't know anything about that. Because I don't wear earrings, so I don't know. Anyway. So yes, it just identifies who is whom and what tribe you're from, or what clan you are from. Remember the casting of lots? That little tiny, not very big, 9 inches in height, both the Urim and the Turim is there. They were very big. They fit in that little 9x9 pouch. On those pouches was certain markings. How many sides these had, the Bible doesn't tell you how many sides they're on either one of those coat casting lots. Whether they were 3 sides, 7 sides, there might have been more than 1 side. We don't know how many they were. I have never seen one, and people have a picture in their mind what it is, but since we're not there, we don't know what it looked like.
Right? The
Urim and the Turim. A marking of the tribes. There were 12 tribes. Each one of them had.
All
on one of the Urim, the Urim and the Turim. Right. Light, like aura. Right. And if they had 12, then it could have been a significant number of sides to it. I do not know. I don't have the slightest idea. I would think it says at least 4 sides, so it's 3, 3, 3, and 3. I may be wrong. I don't know what it looks like. Anyway, let's go down from there. Does that kind of answer your question a little about the earring? Okay, it's not like we go down to the local jewelry store and men buy an earring for the wives or buy an earring for themselves. It's an entirely different world. All right. Now, very interesting here. Yes.
I was just looking up earrings, and it seems also that in some way the earrings were connected with the worship of pagan gods. For example, Esau.
I understand that. But at the very same time, we have the prophecy that talking to the house of Israel, I put earrings in your ears.
Yes.
So it's not against the world of word of God. What happens, paganology takes it as a worship symbol, contrary to what it really was representing. Okay, and it's like they had to get rid of the, when Moses created the, we're not there yet, the snake on brass. They had to get rid of it because they worshipped it
right.
As a god. So let's get rid of it. Okay.
Right.
That's my input.
Yeah, but it seems it could also identify what god you worship.
Well, that's true. The same way you have the awl in your ear for your master, it tells you who is your, not worshiper, but who you're going to obey and respond to. I don't have anything against that. Most men, when they wear an earring today, I don't know why they do it. But just, I don't have to ask them. I don't want to ask them. All right, so now we have here Aaron. And he wants all this golden ring, so they gave it to him. Okay, they're broken to pieces. And he, verse 4, and he received the earrings from their hand and fashioned it and engraved the tool into a molten calf. And they said, this is Elohim. Read it in Hebrew. Don't use that other word, gods, because it misunderstands what's going on. This is your Elohim, O Israel, that brought you out of Egypt. Who said, and did Moses say this? Did Aaron say this? Or did the people say this? The people said this. When Aaron saw it, what was he going to do? Well, build an altar. And Aaron proclaimed something. What did he proclaim? It's a what? Tomorrow is a feast unto Yahuwah, Yahweh, the creator of heaven and earth. So we're stuck here. Okay, did Aaron make the calf? Doesn't say that. He fashioned what? He fashioned what? All he did with tools and giving credit to him, but be careful what we're looking at. He's held accountable, yes, but he couldn't do it of and by himself. It took others to make this thing to work. Because it's the people who rebelled. It's the people who are stiff-necked. Now, I'm not apologizing for Aaron. I'm just saying, be careful how we judge Aaron. Because previously, in the previous 29th chapter, God said to Moses, this is how you will anoint Aaron and his priesthood. So he was anointed to be a priesthood before this happened.
Okay. No, but even late in the New Testament, you know, God, Aaron is praised. I mean, he's a righteous man
he's
in
right
God's
in
eyes. But so that's, it says he took a tool, though, and fashioned it.
Well, okay.
So
when we quote, give the responsibility to our President of the United States for any actions any member of his staff does. Right? It's Obama did this. This is Obama's cause. Obama did this. Obama did that. No, it wasn't him personally. It was his staff or members of the Congress or his party, members of whatever it is. But it's just like this thing. Look at the quote, Obamacare. It didn't come from him at all. Could have came from two other people. But who gets the credit? Obama. Who gets the blame? Obama. And they say it's his bill. It's his writing. He wrote it. Well, no, he didn't. Others did it. Something came out from it. I'm not standing up for the President of the United States. I'm just telling you what I'm saying is be careful because he was supposed to do something. And Moses was angry with him. We'll get to the point when Moses is angry against him. It's very important to know what God did in front of Moses first before Moses did it to Aaron. Now, what was Aaron's response? We're not done yet. And so God said to him, get down there. Get down there. Oh, wow. What day was it? It was the 40th day. Feast unto the Lord was the 40th day of Moses coming, having been up the mountain, and it was the 40th day they failed as a people. He says they are stiff-necked. And God was so angry, he didn't want anything to do with them ever again. Well, not technically speaking. We'll get to there later. Stiff-necked. What's stiff-necked mean? No humility, no humbleness, no voluntary submitting yourself to being honorable. Now, my wife had heard something, and I kind of reversed it on her. But I said something about be a man, get on your knees, and pray. I said, okay, it works. I'm going to reverse it. Get on your knees, stand up, and be a man. You've got to have strength from the eternal. You can take one way or the other. It depends on how you view a thing. But, you know, how does a man become a man? He's got to be humiliated and humbled before God. Man cannot become a man unless he becomes that point. That's why Moses was the man. What's Moses known for? The most meek of them all. Wow. That's pretty, that sounds awesome, isn't it? And yet he was the most powerful. He still affects your life today. We also know in the book of Revelations, at the final cursings that take place, it says, oh, the song of and the song of the Lamb. So he's going to affect the world, quote, to come, end quote, as well as the cursings to come. Right? That's how powerful this individual is. That's why he should be greatly honored. Okay? Now when Aaron said, well, make it a feast unto Yahweh. Now, did Yahweh really say, oh, okay? No. No, he didn't. He said, get down there! This is not my feast! No, he didn't say that, but you almost hear. So it's kind of like, you know, Aaron's trying to do his very best to try to make it look like it's of God. Okay? Have you ever done anything in your entire life that you try to make it look like it's of God? And lo and behold, it wasn't. It was you? No, you never did that, did you? No, I never did that. No, I'm never guilty of that, right? Oh, we do something. He says, oh, God, have me do this. I heard the word from God. All of a sudden, it's a curse. And you take the complete guilt. You take the complete blame. And you have to be humble and respectful and be broken and contrite. And other God will say, okay, you stiff-necked person, don't you understand what's going on? You have not humbled yourself toward me. Now, there's something here that Moses said. Actually, that God said. Verse 10, he says, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them. Now I'll make you a great nation. Now, does that sound like he was mad? I hope I tried to make it sound like he was mad. He wasn't nice and calm and saying, by the way, Moses, I want to say this to you. Leave me alone. I'll go in. I'll just beat him up. Then I'll make a great nation out of you. It didn't sound like that, did it? You know, he was angry. His wrath was hot. You know what hot means? Hot. Hot-tempered? We get the word hot-tempered. Have you ever been hot-tempered? No, of course not. You've never been hot. You've never lost your temper at ever, right? Now, well, God didn't lose his temper. He just got hot. It burns. When his temper goes up, you burn. I burn. My temper goes up, you don't burn. Just look at me and say, you idiot, shut up. Right? Some kids may be terrified of me, but, you know, after a while, when they grew up, they say, yeah, he's just an old man. Anyway, And Moses turns around and says, why does your wrath burn hot against your people? Hope you brought out of the land of Egypt. And, of course, he uses a big excuse. You know, like, okay, you know, you brought them out of Egypt. Egypt's going to say something about you. He says, turn your fierce wrath and relent from the harm to your people. Now, I'll ask you this question. Do you think Moses actually convinced him? Really? If he convinced him, he broke his promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He broke his promise to Joseph. He broke the promise to all of them. Well, I can't do that. What was his object?
Well, no.
What do you think? What do you think that Moses actually heard up there?
Wasn't he going to make a great nation through Moses? So he could still keep the promises.
But it couldn't do through a Levite.
No.
You couldn't do it through a Levite. Because they would all be Levites. There'd be no such thing as Jews. No such thing as Ephraimites. No such thing as anybody. He was married to another woman, wasn't even an Israelite. Okay? What was he showing? He was showing Moses something very powerful. Now, God, has Moses ever seen God mad before? Yes. Mad at whom? Pharaoh and the Egyptians and those people. Now, we see God, he sees God angry at his people. And it looks like it's worse than it was before. Right?
My question was, is it because Moses is so meek that he wouldn't accept that? Lord, I don't want to be the one, the great nation.
Well, no. We'll get to what Moses said later. Very important to pay attention to what he said later.
It just, you know, Moses, though he was the most humble man on earth, but yet he had the courage to come against the creator of the universe.
God doesn't
and,
love him.
I mean, even when you look at the other prophets, right, they fell on their face before the angel of the Lord. I mean, but he, it sounds like he just stood there and, you know, pleaded with God to refrain.
Right. I have no object. This is the reason Moses is so fantastic. He was the man, all right? And God liked this guy because he had enough manhood in him, gumption, to even hear the wrath of God. Now, he didn't tell the wrath of God to the people. I mean, God didn't speak to the people his wrath. He terrorized them, frightened them on Mount Sinai, but it was the smoke and the thunder and the earthquake that frightened him, and his voice so powerful, so big, but he just gave a bunch of 10 things. But to scare them, like Moses, really, boy, you really mean business, don't you? Yeah, I mean business. All right. So it makes Moses, as we go into farther into, especially the book of Deuteronomy, we get into the mold, we see Moses more and more understanding God. Very important in this particular area of chapter 32 and 33 to see where the picture has changed. All right. As we keep on going, I'm not going to finish this at all. Sheesh. But I do want to say something very fantastic. Verse 15. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tablets of the testimony, or the witness, were in his hands. The tablets were written on both sides. On one side and the other side were written. Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. How many times have you seen a picture of, you know, this picture, this old man with tablets, he's got two of them in there, you know. Do they look kind of big? Yeah, they look kind of big. Now, could they be smaller? Yeah, well, written this side and that side, this side, they could be smaller. I want to think about this for a moment. I thought about this for a moment. I said, okay, both sides. We got 1, 2, 3, 4 sides. That's interesting. There's 10 commandments. Ooh, I can't divide 4 to 10 and come out with a nice number here. It doesn't work. Okay. Oh, I know. I thought, this is my thinking, this is richest thinking only. Right? One of the tablets would have had 2 commandments on one side and 2 commandments on the other side. The other tablets would have had the remainder of them of 3 and 3. Makes sense to me. Now, how big were they? That's fascinating. All right, how big was the ark? That was what? 45 inches by 27 inches. Now, how big were the tablets? They got to fit inside there, right? What was the ark built for? To hold the tablets. So it might have been a good size. Maybe, of course, undersized because they had to fit inside. They could have been what you might say, you know, a cubic and a quarter to 2 cubics wide. Well, I think up to 1 cubic to 2 cubits wide. But this question I had asked myself, and I said, okay, how were they placed in the ark? Written this side and that side, this side and that side. Uh-oh. Were they laid on top of one another? Were laid side by side? Remember? How high is it? 27 inches high. It might have been pretty good sized tablets. They could have been wide, 2 feet, 3 feet long, maybe about 3 feet long, that wide. I didn't tell you how thick they were. I was looking at that. I said, you know, this is my thinking. I can't picture them laying on top of one another. Well, they could have then. I don't know. So inside this ark, they might have had some kind of, I don't, doesn't say that, slots that slid in, helped them place. Because inside there, it also had to hold a bowl of what? Later, manna. And later had to hold what? How big was Aaron's rod? No longer than, you know, inside diameter, which is probably 3 feet. It's a typical measurement. Okay. So his rod wasn't very big. It's not the staff now. Don't get it confused. Staff was one thing. A rod is something else. So it's kind of fascinating to think about this. Because I was thinking about that this morning. I said, this is fascinating. How big those things were, you know? Well, they could be kind of small. But they had to be seen. They had to be big enough to be seen. Even if it was in Hebrew, it had to be big enough to be seen. Ancient Hebrew, not modern Hebrew, but ancient Hebrew. They had to be seen and understood. And I thought, that's quite fascinating. And so I had to be big enough so everybody would recognize what they said, what it said. I do not know how often they were moved from the ark for the people to see. I do not know. Now, remember, the priest could do this. The high priest could have and lift it up. And when they tore the thing down, they had to tear it down. They had to do certain things with it. They had to lift the thing up, put the ark, the tablets in there. They had to lift it up, put Aaron's rod in there. They had to lift it up to put in the bowl of manna in there. So there were certain men that probably from, I think we'll get to the 10th chapter of Numbers, but not today. Certain men are allowed to do that. But not everybody. Oh, I'm not going to get very far. I do want to say something. I do not have an answer of the powder being ground in, because gold oven by itself cannot be turned into powder unless it's mixed with another compound. It's another compound. Gold by itself, your gold earrings or whatever it is, your rings, they have to be mixed with another compound in order for it to remain and keep its shape. Because pure gold does not keep its shape oven by itself. So they have to have a hardening material or no hardening compound inside of it. So when he smashed it up and broke it up, it probably, the pieces of silver that was in the compound helped break it apart and it had to drink the stuff. We won't talk about that today because I don't have time to it. But I do want to go to verse 22 for a moment. Go to verse 22 of chapter 32. I've talked about this before, and I want to try to explain it to you again. Do not be angry with my Lord. This is Aaron talking now to Moses. You know the people that they are set to do, and that word is translated almost exclusively in English to be evil. That's not what it says in Hebrew. What does it say in Hebrew? Bad or wrong. Remember, I talked to you about Genesis chapter 2, verse 9. And out of the garden, the Lord God made every tree grown that was pleasant to sight and for good for food. And the tree of life was also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and, it says, bad. Where does evil come in? It comes in the book of Psalms. Very first chapter 1, verse 1. We even have a song about it, right? Blessed is the man who does walk in the counsel of the, says, ungodly, which is what in Hebrew? Russia. Russia. Not Russia. Russia. Okay? Which means, blindly, wicked. Now, okay, I'll make a comment. Don't get confused with what I'm saying. When you have the knowledge to do something that's bad, it will lead to evil if you keep doing that. Don't get me wrong. But you can stop it and turn and say, I'm going to do that which is good, and then the bad ceases.
Yeah, like the Hebrew talk, you know, that word ra, adversity, calamity, disaster, this kind of thing. You know, so when Aaron says that they are prone to adversity, they're prone to calamity, they're prone to disaster, they create their own walking, talking, breathing adversity, calamity, and disaster. They do this to themselves.
Yeah. Do we do that to ourselves? Oh, so we should learn something from what took place. Do you think that you would never, ever, ever do what they ever, ever did when you heard the Ten Commandments? Are you more perfect than they were? No. You are prone to listen to good and evil. You are prone to act upon good or prone to act upon bad. It's within us. Be careful how you judge. Because there's for us to look and see. Oh, they did it. Do I do it? Am I vulnerable to doing bad things? I got knowledge of bad. If I keep it up, something's going to happen. Wickedness is going to take over. Now remember, God loves these people so much that He gave His only begotten Son that they may have eternal life. Don't cast them away. Don't judge them. Did they do wrong? Yes. Did they transgress the law? Yes. What else is new? Have you ever done wrong since you've known the knowledge of God? Well, of course not. You've been perfect, right? Go ahead.
You know, I think of like Aaron when he said, you know, we're going to declare a feast to, you know, the Lord, you know, the all caps, you know, and all that. He's trying, it seems to me that he's trying to take a bad, evil tree and make good fruit out of it. You can't do that. And that's what I think he is trying to do here.
I want to go on farther this thing because that's what he starts approaching. He tells the people to do this. And God says, oh no, take off those garments you just put on. Get rid of them. I'm mad at you. Right? Now, it's just an interesting statement. We won't get there because we're not there yet. It's the next chapter.
It seems like he didn't, at least from what is written, he didn't even say one word that, no, this is not what the Lord would have us do, or let's wait for Moses another week. I mean, he didn't try to convince
Aaron was not what?
Perfect.
Now, Moses, I didn't get there because we're running out of time. Moses is extremely angry at Aaron. Because Aaron, did not restrain them.
Right, exactly.
He could have restrained them. He could have restrained them from building the calf. Yeah. He could have restrained himself from building an altar. He could have restrained. He tried to quote, what do I want to say? Be politically correct.
Appease the people.
Be politically, be kind to them and have mercy upon them and let them do what they want to do. I mean, Moses, wait, I don't waste that either, you know.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know. No one knew he was going to be there for 40 days.
Yeah.
Oh, Bill had one more comment.
That's partly why they didn't sing the Song of Aaron, though, in Revelation.
Yes. Go ahead.
Actually, there's something earlier on, like when God, you know, he's kind of yelling at Moses or whatever, and he's getting really upset, and he says, you know, I'm going to make you a people instead of them. I'm just going to wipe them out, start all over again. And Moses says, don't start all over again. This, you know, don't break your promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and everybody. But the interesting thing is when God says, let me try to backtrack here. He says, the verse says, so the Lord changed his mind about the harm which he had said he'd do to the people. They didn't say that God changed his mind about making Moses' descendants a nation. In a sense, he did, because we read like later on in the book of Judges about the grandsons going to the north and all that. And where do those descendants of Moses go?
Yeah.
In exile with everybody else.
Okay, so If there's no more comments, I'm already 5 minutes, 5 minutes overtime. I didn't get very far, did I? Sheesh. Yeah, I know it's a heavy chapter, but I thought I could get through it quick. The reason why I try to get through a chapter as quick as I can, because some of you people don't come back for a while, and I like to be able to get some points going. That's not against you. But I'm saying sometimes you got things to do, you got family, you got sickness, you got something happens, and you're not going to come. Because something happens, you know. And I like to get as much information in your head as fast before you depart.
So stay another half
off. No, that's not proper. Somebody else must have this floor beside me. All right, so I will try it in next week. Oh, one more last question.
Verse 17 of chapter 32. Why did he call it a noise of war in the camp? When weren't they sounding happy and they were shouting to this calf and everything?
I'm sorry, verse 17 is what now?
Exodus 32, verse 17.
Why did Joshua think it was
a noise of a sound of war?
What do you think going through Joshua's mind? What happened just before they went and heard the Ten Commandments? They're at war. That's what he hears, war. Okay? Because he's a person who thinks that way. Hey, God created him for that purpose to defend and go to war. And when we go in the book of Joshua, he's constantly at war. So he's a general. So he's going to think like a general thinks, so war. Doesn't like it, but he's got to think of war. So he... But the point is that he didn't hear what was being said. Because God didn't talk to Joshua. God talked to Moses and said, get down there, this is what they're doing. And when Moses came down, he said, they're singing. That would have snapped Moses' thinking, changed his process of thinking real quick. I mean, Joshua wasn't dumb. He just couldn't hear what was going on. Where were the people encamped? They were camped where? Horeb. They were not camped at Mount Sinai. They were camped at Mount Horeb, where the water was. Don't get the two areas in the same place. They're not. Two different areas. I really don't know. I've not been there. I've seen pictures. They're not that far apart. As far as pictures are being seen. But for us, it may be like from here to Hillsburg. I don't know. Maybe, you know. But they're high in a mountain. So back in those days, people didn't have bad hearing either. We've inherited bad hearing. With all the rock and roll stuff. You know, blame it on rock and roll. That's all good enough. Okay. And the big, huge motorcycles and, you know, bang, bang, bang. And jackhammers, all that kind of stuff, you know.